As we enter the holiday season, I want you to take a moment and think about the different holidays. Which one of them does not involve food? Think about it for a moment. Out of all the holidays of the year, the ones we actually celebrate and do something with, not just a day off from work, how many of them do not involve food? I argue none of them. Think of Thanksgiving, that's like all about food. What else do we think about on Thanksgiving but food? Christmas, even though it is about the birth of Jesus, we think quite heavily about cookies and candy and the treats that go with the season and a nice big dinner. Valentine's Day is all about sweets. It really is. It's about candy. Even 4th of July, we think about barbecues and outdoor events. All these different days of the year are about food. So often we forget that food is a huge part of our society and culture. Pretty much everything we do, whenever we celebrate, feast, good events, birthdays, anniversaries, whatever, involves food. Well, this isn't new. Across the entire world, every society, every culture has centered most of their festivities around food. Food is this central thing. Here's a few fun examples for you. So in Indonesia, when someone dies, they actually set a place at the table for the person, put the dead body there, and continue to feed it up to 4 times a day for several days. I guess the idea is food helps them on their journey. I'm not going to guess, but they do that. In Kenya, the Maori tribe used to, and they still do it in a different extent, when their warriors were sent out across the desert, would give them cow's blood to give them strength for the journey. Today, they still drink cow's blood ritualistically to give them strength for their journey, even to the point of drinking it directly from the wound in the cow. In England, on the National Bank Holiday, kind of a strange day in my mind, they take wheels of cheese and roll them down the hill and race them so that the people run after the wheels of cheese, the first one to the finish line wins. These wheels of cheese can be up to 8 pounds and roll at about 70 miles an hour. Fun to watch when you think about it. People from all over the world come to watch this cheese race. So here's just a few examples of how food is used throughout the world. Now, in our context, we have a bit of a challenge. Often, especially sociologically, we think that food came first and ritual was added later. That we know we need to eat, we eat things, and then we ritualize it so that we have a reason for good festivities. I argue it's really the other way around. We knew the value of these things, and to encourage the value, we make a ritual and then put food around it. Because all of our rituals really do involve food. There's something that brings us together, binds us as a society, helps us join with our neighbors and friends and celebrate. So we realize the value of certain things in our lives. For example, being thankful, Thanksgiving, birth of Jesus, Christmas, the sweetness of love, I don't know, Valentine's Day, the birth of our country, 4th of July. All these things are important points in our year that are ritualized around food. So in this way, we need to see our first reading and gospel in a different light. It's not as though the people saw food as important and then God ratified it. It's quite the opposite. Food came first and God made a point that food was necessary for understanding him. There wasn't as though we go up to heaven and just hang out staring at the wall all day. Heaven is a place where there is still food because food shows us God's providence, shows us God's goodness. It reminds us of our humanity. So the first reading today from Isaiah is really a wonderful expression, not of what they did then, but as their hope for something to come. They are not talking about the feast they celebrate now. They're talking about a feast when Israel is restored, when everything's brought to its fore, when God is all in all again and now provides not just food, but this incredible feast of choice wines and the best meats and all these wonderful foods. That's the joy and the goal. The same thing with our gospel. What does the king do? He has a wedding feast for his son. It's a feast. Jesus compares the kingdom of heaven to a feast, which is kind of fun to think about it that way. We often think of heaven as just hanging out in the sky, not this big festival, almost like a party, a celebration. But that's the point Jesus is trying to make. Heaven is like a festival with food. Food not just there, but food provided by God. What's interesting about this is in the book of Revelation, there's actually 3 core elements that are about the way that people experience heaven. There's 3 things they do, and only 3. First is they give gifts. In the beginning of the book of Revelation, we have the 24 elders who take off their crowns and give them to God as a sign of gift. They are giving God their lives, everything they did in their lives, symbolized by the crown. So, gift giving. The second thing is worship. Now, we often mischaracterize worship. Worship in the book of Revelation is very specific and kind of beautiful when you see through the hymns that they use. In each of the hymns that characterize worship in the book of Revelation, they're focused on one key element, glorifying the God who has saved them. Each key hymn focuses on Jesus, who is the Lamb, who was slain, who brought salvation to the world, whose blood redeemed us. That is their worship. Their worship is to glorify the God who has been there for them, the God who has saved them, the God who brought them new life, the God who has given them grace. It's a reflection of that and a reiteration of the goodness of what God has done. The third key element is a feast. They eat actually several times. Sometimes it's compared to more like of a banquet. Other times it's just a tree with fruit on it that constantly has fruit. A tree that bears fruit 12 times a year. It's a very productive tree. Regardless, it makes a point that there's a sense that's invaluable about eating even in heaven. In heaven, it's not just the fact of consuming food. It's the realization that God continues to provide. God keeps helping us. These three core elements, however, are the Mass. Go figure. What do we do at the beginning? We listen. By listening attentively, we can give ourselves. By letting ourselves be open to the mystery of God who provides for us. Then in a more prominent way, we give our gifts of money. Those gifts are necessary. They're the reflection of our lives given over to God, a realization of what God has done for us, and a gift returned for that. Then what do? We worship, not on our terms, but what God has given us. We make a point to remember what God has done. Jesus died, rose from the dead, ascended to the Father, gave us the Spirit for the forgiveness of sins. Those are the core focus of the Eucharistic prayer. So that by representing the sacrifice of Christ, we're remembering again the God whom we worship. And why? Because we have been given new life. We have been given grace. And this is why we're here. Lastly, we have a feast. We eat. You know, we eat. That's why people come. Most people actually come because they want to receive communion. There's something about it that nourishes us, gives us strength, and we desire it to some extent, everyone a little bit differently. But that's the three elements coming together. Offering, worship, and feast. Here it is. So that the Mass becomes our foretaste of the heavenly reality. Here we experience what worship in heaven looks like, what it's like to be in front of God. The core things that are most valuable for our lives, both spiritually and physically and also mentally. How we come to know our God, how we come to worship Him, and how we come to understand ourselves. Herein lies the challenge. I think for a great majority of us, we find the Mass quite boring. You know, it's the same thing every week, basic structure, nothing really changes. How do we engage further? For some people, thinking of the Mass as the heavenly feast and the way of worshiping God makes them not want heaven because it seems like, why would I want to do that for eternity? It's already boring enough. So that's where we have to challenge ourselves, to dive deeper, to really come to experience the Mass as it gives us grace, it inspires us, gives us nourishment, helps us prepare for heaven. Because today's gospel is very chilling for that reason. Look at the examples we have. So the king throws a feast. The example is, this is what heaven will be like. How many people will truly make it? The first set is invited. They're invited and the servants go out to bring them to the feast because it's all ready to go. They don't have to do anything. They just have to show up. And they refuse. Don't want to. That can be a lot of us if we're not careful. Yeah, it's kind of boring. Don't really see any merit in it. What's the point? Cool, the king has a feast. I don't really have to show up. It'll be okay. He doesn't really matter in any ways. We speak all these different ideas, and they challenge us. They hurt us, because now the Mass takes less and less importance. We don't think of worshiping God as valuable. We don't think of prayer as valuable. We just do our thing. So in this way, we're telling ourselves a lie that this doesn't really have value, which is the challenge. Where is the value? How has it changed us? Where is that new life? Where is that grace that we really want? The king, upset, sends out another delegation. And this one has two different responses. The first one is the people go off to their own things. One goes to his farm, one goes to his business, but they don't come. This is the other lie we tell ourselves, that other things are more important. And frankly, it's not like God punishes us for not being here. It's not like everyone who didn't show up for Mass today died all of a sudden, because frankly, there'll be a lot more people here next week. That's not how it works. Neither does he destroy half of Harlowton because, hey, people didn't show up to Mass and he's mad. So it's like, well, where's the consequence? Where's the challenge there? Is there any ramifications for not showing up to Mass? The answer is no. And the reason is very simple, because God wants us to choose it. If we think other things are more important, that's the choice we have made. We have decided that God is not that important and everything else is. And therefore, we're going to make our own decisions. The second side is much more scary. They killed the servants. They made a point, we are not going to that feast. The king will be dishonored through us. These are the people who say, I want to worship God on my level. I get to choose how I worship God. I get to choose when I go. I get to choose how I praise him. Knowing is to decide for me how I worship God. What's funny is, God planned from the very beginning how we ought to worship him. He didn't give the Israelites a choice. When they're wandering in the desert, he made it clear, you worship me this way or I kill you. There will be no disgracing God or choosing how we ought to be or choosing what ought to be done. The reason is very simple. Because if we choose how to worship, we choose who God is. And then God ceases to exist. If he chooses how we worship him, we can encounter him as he is, on his level, and know he truly exists. So by making a point that this is the way we worship God, we can fully encounter him. We can know him as a real being, not something that's just there or we want him to exist, but who actually exists. The last group is the most important. So the servants go out again, having the first two delegations fail and all the ones who were truly invited not coming. Now he invites everyone. This is something we often dismiss. God invited you here. He wants you here. He desires you to be here. He loves you so much, he created you to want to worship him. This is something that's striking to us. The last delegation went to everyone so that the room would be full and that the king would have people there to celebrate this feast. That's what he wants from you. He wants you to worship him. He wants you to celebrate. He wants you to find joy. He wants you to find grace in this. He designed it that you may come to know him. You are the ones invited. You are the ones chosen. To realize that and to understand that gives us a new emphasis, a new encouragement, a new desire to be here. So here lies our challenge. If we want to find the truth of the Mass, really enjoy it, really come to understand what God has done, we have to keep diving deeper, keep exploring the mysteries of what we do, keep opening ourselves up to that grace, that we may feel the power of God in our lives and recognize that he designed this for our sake, that we may come to know what it's like to worship him, choose it once we die, and enjoy it for all eternity.